We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of 3Maw.
Hello and welcome into another edition of 3Maw. I am John Kurtz, joined as always by Derek Young and Cole Manbeck. Today, we break down another heartbreaking loss for the Wildcats, 74-72. They lose on the road at Cincinnati, a key blow to the NCAA tournament hopes of this team, and even more tough to swallow after Tyler Perry hits a big three to put K-State up with under 30 seconds to go. Might have led you to needing a drink after the game. And of course, if you did, you, I'm sure, were drinking some 360 vodka or some Ben Holiday bottled in bond bourbon from our friends at Holiday Distillery. Great K-State folks who support us. Please make sure you get out and support them. Try the Ben Holiday bottled in bond bourbon if you are a bourbon guy. If not, 360 vodka works great as well. Cocktails, whatever it is that you might be pouring up. For this week, I mean, a couple of big games with KU and Iowa State. Make sure that you are ready to go with our friends at Holiday Distillery. Man, I mean, this felt like it fit the bill for what a lot of road games have been like this year for K-State. BYU, Texas certainly come to mind, not playing well for a good portion of the game, feeling like it's not really within reach. And then you make a charge in the last 7 or 8 minutes of the game, get very close, in this case, actually take the lead because of a real Herculean effort by Tyler Perry in the second half of that game. But then K-State doesn't hold on. They give up the big three, and Tyler Perry not able to draw a foul, trying to get into the lane to tie the game after that, and it turns into what feels like a backbreaking loss. Now, look, if you go out and win a couple of games this week, it won't really matter all that much. But as we sit here right now, staring a trip to Lawrence in the face and then a game against Iowa State, who's playing about as well as anybody in the country, it's not great. It's not great. I think that's the frustration. Like, why this same pattern on the road? Why not more consistency earlier on in games? But not much you can do about it right now, DY.
Yeah. I would say similarities to what happened in both Austin and Provo. The difference being here is that you actually took the lead, right? So that's at that point, I'll be honest, I kind of thought that they had prevailed, and this was, I had a theme picked out thinking that they had won the game, and not that I jinxed it. I didn't write it down or even tell anyone at the time because I was afraid to jinx it. So don't blame me for that. But I was going to say it was kind of karma for Lubbock in terms of road games, because out of the road games, all of them you probably deserved to lose besides the Texas Tech one. So at some point, maybe law of averages works out, and at some point you win a road game that you didn't deserve to win. And that felt like it was going to perhaps be the Cincinnati game. In the end, it wasn't. Got burnt by a lococious three at the end, and that's all she wrote for the Wildcats at Fifth Third Arena. Point blank, I think an easy synopsis of how this went wrong. They were crushed by all the turnovers in the first half. And at the end of the day, I hate to point fingers, but Arthur Kaluma and Cam Carter just weren't good enough. And when you have two of your three play like that, it's going to be tough to win, especially on the road.
Yeah, I think that summarizes it pretty well, D.Y. Kaluma and Carter combined for 12 turnovers, 6 turnovers apiece. They don't shoot the ball well. Kaluma goes 2 of 11 from the floor, gives them 11 or 7 points. Carter was a struggle for much of the game, and the turnovers are what gets me, and I think gets a lot of Kansas State fans. They were infuriating turnovers, and it was against the Cincinnati team that came into the game 188th in the country in turnover percentage forced. I mean, this is not a team that forces you into a lot of turnovers, and let's be honest, we all watched the game. They really didn't force K-State into the turnovers. The majority of K-State's turnovers were self-inflicted, careless turnovers, not valuing the basketball, and at this point in the season, it's not acceptable to have some of the turnovers that they have had. I mean, just simple dribbling, catching the ball, not even a hand in there, and just dribbling it out of bounds or losing it, not catching it with nobody around. It's very frustrating that that is happening as we sit in March. And for whatever reason, they have just really struggled with it on the road. And once again, this is a team that buries itself in the first half of games. And I know they were only down 7, but the way that they have played offensively in Big 12 play in the first half, as it's, I don't have an explanation for it. I mean, in 11 of their 16 Big 12 games in the first half, they're at 0.9 points per possession or lower. That's from KSU underscore fan. And on Saturday, they are what, DY? 1.35 points per possession in the second half, but in the first half, like 0.8 points per possession. Again, for whatever reason, they cannot put things together in the first half. They have 11 turnovers, and in the opening half, they turned it over on 33% of their possessions in the first half. And that's frustrating. You can't. This team is not good enough offensively from a skill set. Like, they don't have enough firepower to just keep giving away possessions.
Well, and the other thing is 26 points off the turnovers, right? So Cincinnati just killed them off the turnovers, and that's what's just maddening about some of these turnovers, man. I mean, Cam, my guy, like, I love you, but Cam turnovers are not just turnovers. They are typically turnovers that turn into a dunk on the other end or a layup on the other end, and that happened time and again. You know, I mean, there's one where it felt like he just drove into the lane and scooped it right to a guy, you know, on the run going back the other way. And you're just like even if these are turnovers where you're trying to do too much, you jump in the lane and rocket a pass over to the corner or something and it goes out of bounds. You know, I mean, like, that's one thing. But these are turnovers that are just turning into, you know, setting up a transition opportunity that just kills you. And that was a part of the frustration for me, too, is that it was like, dude, how is Cincinnati scoring the way that they are? This is not a good offensive team, and we haven't even mentioned this yet. This was a shorthanded Cincinnati team that was playing without one of its best players and dealt with multiple injuries throughout the game. Now, I know guys were coming back in, but, like, that was a pretty beat-up, beleaguered, and Cincinnati team that battled foul trouble throughout the game. So, like, I mean, there's no real excuse for it at this point. You are correct. That's a game that they should have been able to go out and win. And I think part of the bottom line here is we identify these trends that they turn it over too much and that they have the slow starts and can't kick it into high gear until the very end. It just is what they are. You know, I mean, I think it's just the sign of a team that is a bubble team and on the wrong side of the bubble. Like, if you're not good enough to overcome some of those patterns, you just are what you are. And it's frustrating to be so close and say, well, they've been really close in this game, really close in that game. They just kind of are what they are, in particular on the road. That's the unfortunate reality. And as much as we do want to talk about, I heard Stan Weber mention this. I can't remember what the specific stat was that K-State is in games decided by 5 points or less, but they were over 500 because think of how many games they've won in situations like this too. Like, it's frustrating that they lose what feels like a lot of close games now throughout the year. But if you think about all the overtime games, Baylor, Kansas, even going back to Oral Roberts, North Alabama, some of those games, like, they have won their fair share of these two. So at a certain point, you just can't put yourself in this many games that are that close when you're playing a team that's probably not headed to the tournament in Cincinnati on the road that's shorthanded. You got to go out and just take the game and win the game. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of the bottom line to me, and this team just is not good enough to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you play that many close games, you're liable to get bit enough to where it hurts you. And like you said, it is what they are. And they have two games left to maybe, I wouldn't say defeat that notion, because I don't even think that would defeat the notion, but to scrape something across, and maybe you're playing in Dayton. I think that's probably feels like best case scenario to me. You have to do a lot in Kansas City if you only get one of the next two, in my opinion.
Yeah, the turnover thing, just one more point on that, because Cincinnati, it's also K-State not forcing turnovers. So, John, you mentioned the 26 to 9 or whatever it was. They got outscored by point top turnovers by a significant number.
26 to 9, yeah.
Yeah. And so Cincinnati, offensively, has an 8.9% turnover percentage in the game. That's their second lowest of the season and their lowest in their last 24 games. The 28.2 turnover percentage K-State had that Cincinnati forced was a season best for the Bearcats. And so that was the highest turnover rate that Cincinnati had forced on the season against any opponent. And then you look back at the West Virginia game, right? I mean, West Virginia is a team offensively that turns the ball over on 18.2% of their offensive possessions. That's 260th in the country. Against K-State, they turned it over on 7.8% of their possessions. That was a season best for West Virginia as well. So you're not forcing teams into mistakes at all and getting any runouts or easy baskets, and you're giving them a bunch of gimmies by just giving the ball away and letting them get out and get layups and dunks and transition, and you're not getting shots up when you're not a great shooting team, and so you're just throwing away possessions. And what is frustrating about it is Cincinnati's free throw rate in the game was 12.1. That tied for their lowest of the season. K-State got to the free throw line a ton, went 21 or 25 from the line. They had a 50% free throw rate that was tied for the fifth highest Cincinnati allowed this season. So you got to the free throw line a ton. You got them in foul trouble. And K-State rebounding was the biggest concern I had going into the game. Cincinnati was eighth in the country in offensive rebounding percentage and top 25 in defensive rebounding percentage. They're big. They start a 7-footer and they got a couple 6'11 dudes and Reynolds and Locken who can get after it on the glass. And then their guards are long. Well, K-State out-rebounded them by 10. And the 41.4% offensive rebounding percentage that Cincinnati allowed to K-State was the second highest the Bearcats have given up this season. K-State rebounded the ball well. That was my biggest concern. They won that battle.
And K-State, you mentioned the shooting, but they shot over 40% from the three-point line for the third game in a row as well. So that's three games in a row where Kansas State shot over 40% from the three-point line. They shot 9 of 21 from the three-point line against Cincinnati. They did well in a lot of areas, but it comes down to they got blown out and just decimated so much in the turnover differential that it didn't matter.
Oh, I mean, the first half, a 33% effective field goal percentage, 0.79 points per possession per KSU underscore fan. Second half, 1.35 points per possession and a 67% effective field goal percentage. They doubled their effective field goal percentage in the second half, and it's just the continued trend of this team clawing their way back in the second half, putting together an offensive hot stretch, but not being able to close the deal. And it sucks because when, like you said, John, when Tyler Perry hit that three, to put them up one, and then they got the defensive stop on the ensuing possession. I really thought they were going to pull it out, DY, to your point earlier as well. And if they could have scored there, I think they probably do win it. But ended up taking a 25-26-foot three-pointer, and Cincinnati gets the ball back and hits a three to win it.
And you can't give it away. And speaking of giving it away, use promo code 3MON23 at homefieldapparel.com, and they will give away their apparel. I mean, not exactly, but 15% off. So almost get 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com using promo code 3MON23. You can get access to 40-plus K-State designs there. You will at least look great when K-State plays Iowa State, even if the team might struggle to make the NCAA tournament here at this point. It's an NCAA tourney kind of fit that you get at homefieldapparel.com. They've got 100-plus other teams as well, so make sure that you get over there and check them out. We are back in just a moment.
This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in below-the-kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code KCSN for 20% off plus free shipping. Trimming the hedges in your Irish garden isn't just for below the belt. Complete your look with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Whether you're sculpting your beard or cleaning up your neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with code KCSN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code KCSN at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever with Manscaped.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, let's talk about, Cole, since you brought it up, let's talk about the last couple of possessions, right? Tyler Perry hits the three, kind of a crazy shot. I didn't think it had a prayer of going in when you let it go. And then you do get a stop and you have a chance to try to extend the lead. I had somebody DM me about this and was like really frustrated. Like, oh, it's just the same thing with Tyler Perry standing around, dribbling around, and then a jack in the three. At least in that context, I was a little more okay with it than I typically would be because they were turning it over all the time. And Cincinnati's rim protection had been pretty good. And trying to get to the rim was a chore, as we would see later, when K-State needed a basket to tie the game. So I didn't think it was like the worst thing in the world, especially with how red hot Tyler Perry has been, which I did see was a Parker in the Discord pointed out he's now up to almost 37% from three in conference play. So that number has really come a long way. But yeah, I mean, I can understand some frustration with that. Then I think where you really talk about maybe you got was the fact that Cincinnati hits you by getting Lukosius open for a three on the next possession. And then, yeah, you try to go attack the basket with the rim protection Cincinnati had. It doesn't work out. You lose the ball and turn it over. So, I'll let you start there with just how you thought K-State handled the final minute of the game, the last couple of possessions.
Well, I mean, Coach Tate talked about the last defensive possession, and they took away – there was four options. They took away three of them. And they still closed out on Lukosius a little bit, but obviously hits it and it's a pretty solid look for him. K-State runs that play for Tyler Perry. He misses it, the one that's a little bit deeper, but that was a better look than the one he made. And he was 6 of 7 from three, and they were turning it over like crazy. I don't think you're going to get a call on the road if you attack the paint either. So they tried that, you know, a couple weeks ago, and they were like, well, that was the wrong thing to do, to try to go into the paint and maybe draw contact or something.
That was in Lubbock. It was in Lubbock, remember? Speaking of the Lubbock game, it was in Lubbock when they had Peru trying to get to the rim, and Tang said after the game that was a mistake. He was kind of taking a bit of a veiled shot at the officials in that game, saying I shouldn't have expected it all. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the way they were turning it over, the way that they were not really doing anything in the paint, and it was, and Tyler Perry 6 of 7 from the 3-point line going into that possession. And he makes a worse look, you know, a minute before that. So, I mean, you could always look back and be like, I'd like to create something a little bit better. I just don't think this team is capable of creating anything better. So I'll actually take that shot.
See, I kind of agree. That I did not have so much of a problem with. The last two possessions may be a little bit different.
You got a guy, now it's a little deeper than you'd like, but he's open and he's 6 of 7 from the 3-point line in that game.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on that. I think they should have called a timeout because I think you can end the game right there. And they ran 29 seconds on the shot clock. They passed the ball 3 times on the possession. Look, it was clear what they were trying to do the entirety of the possession. If you rewatch it,
you pass it more than 3 times, that team turns it over.
Yeah. Well, that's a sad state of affairs if we're just excited that a shot gets up.
I know, but it was an open shot.
Yeah, but it was 3 feet behind the line. I don't know. Like, I get he can make that shot. Just because you can make the shot, though, doesn't mean it's a great shot.
But they're not going to get a better shot than that. Do you want to get something better for Tyler Perry? You're not going to, because that's the only guy they're guarding, because Kaluma and Carter are so bad.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, at that point, Perry has been so hot that you figured they're keying on him. Is somebody else going to be in a spot where if you run a play, can you get a lob at the rim?
I don't trust anyone else. Did you watch the other 39 minutes of that game?
I still think.
Okay. We'll do a hindsight, and I'm not trying to fight with you, but Tyler Perry's 6 of 7 from the 3-point line, and he's your only guy really doing anything offensively. If you take the ball out of his hands and someone else misses the shot, all of us are screaming, why didn't you go to Tyler Perry?
I mean, I'm not even opposed to going to Tyler Perry. They were trying to go to Tyler Perry on the play. Like, you can see, they're trying to run him off numerous screens on the down on the baseline. And, he didn't get open on the actual play design. He ended up having to get the ball handed off to him at the top of the key with 7 seconds left on the shot clock, where they were doubling then on him, and he had to make a move to get a shot up off the dribble.
Shots that he made all game.
I mean, I would have liked to have seen a timeout and draw something up. But, I mean, look, Tyler Perry had shot the heck out of the basketball. He's been great over the last 9 games. So I can probably live with it. You know, when he released it, I thought it was going to go in. And that would have been the dagger to end the game. And Tyler Perry, John, you mentioned it earlier, what Parker had said on the Discord. But now over his last 9 games, 20.6 points per game, 51 of 113 from the floor, 45%. And 32 of 78 from three. That's 41%. He's been terrific over a 9-game stretch. So I can live with it, I suppose. I still would have liked to have seen a timeout, but that's looking back at it in hindsight at this point. But then Cincinnati calls the timeout and draws up a play, and, you know, they get a guy an open look, Lukosius, the guy you can't leave open. He drills the three. And what was interesting then is K-State, after they reviewed the clock, K-State comes out of the huddle, and then the play design was to get Tyler Perry going to the rim. So, like, the previous play was him shooting a three, then the next play it's him going to the rim against AZ's Bandego, who is one of the better shot blockers in the country.
Tried both things, didn't work.
Yeah. I don't have any issue with Tyler Perry in this game or anything he's done of late. He's been tremendous, so I want to make that clear. He's the only reason they're in the game.
Right, but that's the problem too. Like, you tried going to the paint with Tyler Perry, didn't work. You tried maybe getting Tyler Perry a three. You ended up getting a semi decent look. Didn't go in. Like, and those are probably the only two things you felt like you could do. Because what about the first 39 minutes made you think that you could go through anybody else? Do you really want the hindsight of saying the game was on the line? Tyler Perry was the only guy that did anything for us for 39 minutes, and then when the game was on the line, we didn't go to him. So you had to.
And this is the problem, DY, when guys are struggling, like Arthur Kaluma and Cam Carter are struggling, and you basically have this big three that you have to rely on game in and game out, night out, and at least two of the three have to hit to probably for Kansas State to win, right?
And a credit to the coaching staff. They came out of the second half, out of the locker room, and they made a concerted effort to get both of those guys going. You could tell there were sets run specifically for both of those. And Carter got going a little. Kaluma got
little.
And they both had moments, but they never took it and ran, even though the coaching staff was just like trying to force them to get going, and they couldn't get going.
The thing I was just going to say to that point, I was just going to say, like, if you had a fourth option, a really good fourth player that you could then, like, if Arthur Kaluma's scuffling, you could take him out of the game. You could put another guy that's 6'10", you know, 220 pounds or so on the court that could go out there and take, or Cam Carter could sit and watch the game for a little bit because you have a fourth option. That's what people are missing when they think about this. They're like, oh, the point guard problem is the problem. I mean, yeah, point guard situation has not been ideal in any way. The turnovers are a problem, et cetera. But a fourth scoring option would take so much pressure off of those three guys and would help alleviate a lot of the things that Kansas State does.
It would. What I will say, too, and it would be my last point before I throw this back to John, is I totally agree with that, too. But, like, Carter and Kaluma didn't even have to be special. So I think that's just not a good excuse for this one. They just have to be not bad.
The 12 turnovers combined between those two is pretty damn staggering. I mean, that's not good. I was going to make the point, too. I mean, a part of the reason that, you know, I heard Tang, I listened to him with Wyatt on the post game, and I heard him say, like, hey, you know, last possession, we covered up a couple things. They had multiple options on that play, and we did a decent job contesting the shot. Like, I don't know. Kasam was a little late getting there, they were trying to defend other things. I get it, but they got on that play. But a reason that they got is because Cincinnati had multiple threats that they could trust, and you had to worry about other guys on they had other things going. Whereas when K-State's on the offensive end, they could just key in on Tyler Perry and make his life really difficult. And you wanted to go to Perry because that's really the only option you feel like you can trust. And that's just an illustration of this problem. Like, Miller had more options to go to on that end of the floor when he's drawn up a play for his team, as opposed to Tang on the other end for K-State. I think that made it tougher for the two situations there. And that's why K-State winds up being a little bit late getting out to Lukosius on a backbreaking three. So,
yeah. Part of it's a score. Part of it's a little bit of the score, too. Kent State. Cincinnati shot a three, but they didn't have to get a three. They were down one. So part of it's a score and being forced to defend both inside and outside the three-point line.
Yeah, and they have a lot of size, right? And you got to worry about the offensive rebound because that's their top 10 in the country at that as well. And look, Lukosius, for, you know, him being their best shooter, 35% from three, there's still a 65% chance playing the odds that shot's not going to go down. And, you know, he'd been scuffling a little bit in the second half after he came out hot early in the game. So I guess I would rather them down one try to take a three there than get to the rim for a layup. But it was still a well-run play. Like, they got a good look, and it worked out. And yeah, you're right, John. I mean, they were running multiple options. Like, Cam Carter had to chase down. Like, the K-State actually, like, they, David Gasson and Cam Carter defended it close to as well as you could, but it was just such a well-run play. With they had a double screen set up, and they could have ran a guy to the baseline. It hurts. That's a painful one because everything that K-State needed to happen on Saturday during the day had gone their way. Villanova became a quad one win. They're 26 in the NCAA net rankings now. K-State picked up their fourth quad one win with that, but their win over Providence by 11 on the road. K-State would have gained two quad one wins in one day to give them five on the season, and USC won at Washington and became a quad two loss, eliminating any quad three or quad four losses on K-State's NCAA tournament resume. UCF lost to Iowa State, which would have meant a win would have locked K-State into getting a first-round bye in the Big 12 tournament. Now they're going to have to fight their way to not play on Tuesday night. They still sit in a position where they have a chance to do that, but could have locked that up as well on Saturday. So that was a painful one.
I know this is probably going to be a little bit lost on K-State fans at this point just because of how they didn't win in Cincinnati. But, geez, I look, you know, they have the last four in first four out, next four out, and for Lenardi and Palm, damn near everybody lost on Saturday. So, I mean, it felt, and then when you think of what happened with Villanova and USC, like, I know this is, like, probably hard to grasp for some that maybe are get a little bit stuck in how the NCAA tournament was fielded for years before it kind of went to this quadrant system and with the net. But, like, as bad as that hurt and as frustrating as it is, and it's a lost opportunity, I mean, you could make an argument that maybe some of these guys would have put Kansas State in the field if they win that game, just because it is a would have been five quad one wins at that point, and others had scuffled. But, like, it didn't really hurt. It just didn't help you. And that's the weird thing with how this goes. Now, it doesn't matter if you go out and lose your next two, and obviously these are really tough games to win. But it's funny that before Cincinnati and after Cincinnati, the picture isn't really that much different for K-State.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. The problem is this week is just about as tough as it gets in the league. I mean, involving Houston would be the only way to make this a tougher week than getting Iowa State and Kansas with one of the two on the road. I don't know. Going to Kansas and then having to play Iowa State at home, it's a tough ask, man. It's going to be really tough.
It's a tough ask. I just mean, like where they're positioned at for tournament. I bet they're still on next four out for most.
Yeah, the problem with the loss, you took away any breathing.
Especially now, the other thing, too, that happened over the weekend was, like, not that I was really getting my hopes up about winning in Lawrence at all, but you would certainly have felt better about the opportunity to do so if Kevin McCullough were still out, right? And Bill Self, like, a week ago was talking about him maybe being out for the freaking season, and then all of a sudden he's out there scoring 20 at Baylor. And you're like, well, what the hell was that? Now, I know it sounds like Kansas circles would tell you maybe that was a bit of a challenge issued to Kevin McCullough to get back out there. But, you know, now he's back. It's senior night. Like, you know, it's whatever. It's about as tough as it's going to get to go into the building for sure.
No, like Cole said, no breathing room, and the asks are much tougher than the one at Cincinnati. I get that. But I just, in terms of where they're at, like on the bubble, I don't think they're anywhere different than they were before Cincinnati. Not that it's a good thing to lose at Cincinnati. I mean, that was your best opportunity and you didn't take it.
Well, let's assume a loss at Kansas. Then just hypothetically, let's say they beat Iowa State. They finish 8-10 in the league. They're 18-13 overall. They've got five quad ones. What do they need to do in Kansas City to make the tournament? I assume they have to win two Big 12 tournament games.
Now, from a quadrant quality win standpoint, they probably only need to win one maybe. But I think they're just going to get penalized so hard by the committee at some point for two things. One, your metrics aren't great. Your net, like all the numbers, those aren't great. You'd be the worst team in the field in terms of the net, even if you got an at-large berth. And I don't think, of the at-large teams, I mean, you would have the worst net ranking. I don't know if the committee's ever taken, and now the net's not that old, but K-State would be the worst team in the net to even get an at-large bid at this point, if it worked out that way, I believe. So that one's going to hurt you. Maybe it hurts your seeding more than your ability to get in. That's what some bracketologists believe. So you're probably going to Dayton no matter what. And then the second thing is like the committee really looks hard at what you've done away from your own home, and Kansas State's really lacking there, which is why I would think another one in Kansas City on top of that would probably be beneficial. Now, your best wins away from home are LSU and Providence, and you really have nothing else to speak of outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, if they beat Iowa State, I think they probably, if they're 8-10, I think they probably are going to play on Wednesday. They'll get a first-round bye, which means, assuming that they would probably get two quad one wins on neutral courts in that scenario, it would involve, in all likelihood, beating, you know, an Oklahoma or BYU. I haven't looked at the standings. TCU, Texas, right? Yeah. Like one of those teams.
Yeah, Oklahoma's probably not as likely anymore. It's probably going to be BYU, Texas, or TCU.
And then having to beat a Iowa State or someone like that on the second round.
It wouldn't be Houston the way it's shaking out, but it might be Iowa State or... Could
it be KU?
Yes.
Could KU be... Okay. So, yeah, not great options. It's unfortunate because you win at Cincinnati, and then if you beat Iowa State, at best, you probably have to win one in KC and you're in.
Yeah. Now, those things can dramatically change too, so... We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick says it might not be KU because right now they're actually in six. And KU's probably going to lose at Houston, you assume. So they're going to finish 10-8. So KU probably is going to be in that fourth, fifth, sixth. Maybe.
That's what I was thinking. If there's a chance in case they would play KU on Wednesday.
Yeah, no thanks. That would mean they'd have to fall.
No thanks, dude. No thanks.
That would mean KU had to fall to the seven, right?
Which is not impossible at this point.
Well, wait, does that happen then if you somehow win in Lawrence, then you wind up drawing Kansas Wednesday in the, I don't know.
Nick says he doesn't think KU will fall any lower than six. And because if they beat K-State, they're going to get their 10th league win. And I don't think they can mathematically probably fall because, I mean, look, TCU blew a 17-point lead at BYU at halftime on Saturday. So,
yeah.
I mean, look, you're asking yourself to win three of four. What you're doing right now is asking yourself to win three of four to end the season against like Kansas, Iowa State, TCU. You know, I mean, like that's potentially what we're trying to do. And you know, has this team shown you any ability to be consistent enough to do it? You know, that's the problem that you're facing.
We're asking them to pick up. They have four quad one wins. We're asking them to pick up three in the next 10 days. And two of them away from home on a team that's lost seven in a row on the road. So
yeah. Now I'm gonna have to bounce here in a second, so I may let you guys just finish this off. But I do want to say two things real quick before I leave. One. Naquan Tomlin scored 28 points and had 7 rebounds on 11 of 15 shooting. He has scored 28, 20, 21, 16, and 17 his last 5 games. But, you know, at least we get Cherry Choco Crunch ice cream. And the other thing I want to say is that I feel very badly for Tyler Perry because you know how badly he wants to play in the NCAA tournament. And that guy has turned into a really good player. Like, you rattled off the stats earlier, like, for as much shit as he took early in the season, like that guy has really stepped his game up and evolved and taken on a role that was not what was intended here. And I'm sure he came here thinking like, I'm getting to the NCAA tournament this way. And he hits the heroic shot at Cincinnati that you think is going to put him in position to do that. I really feel for him, man. If it doesn't happen, I really, really feel for him. So I just wanted to give a shout out there to like, for everybody that's been frustrated with Tyler Perry, like, please recognize what he has done. And that's why I was really frustrated seeing a little bit of that, you know, the shot that he took on the next to last offensive possession for K-State and people kind of grumble. I'm like, guys, like, what more do you want the guy to do? He had been phenomenal and he's been really good in Big 12 play in general, but especially the last like 3 or 4 weeks. So that's what I got. I'm going to bounce and let you guys finish this. That's okay.
All right. Well, hey, no KU, K-State breakdown in detail in Lawrence? No, I don't have anything.
No, that's so. I'll leave that to you. Here's the analysis, Cole. It's senior day. Kevin McCullough is back. They're pissed because they lost earlier in Bramlage.
John, I covered Jacob Pullen and that Elite Eight team went into Allen Fieldhouse and lost 82-65 on senior night, and I sat courtside for that. So there's been some great K-State teams that went in there and didn't have a chance on senior night. So it's just it's a daunting.
This is the only thing I will say about that. It seems like over the years when K-State has had their best teams and they go to Lawrence, like they have Kansas's full attention, and that's when it goes the worst, like the most poorly. And when Bruce has waltzed in there with some, you know,
yeah,
J teams, then you wind up with games that go down to the like the speed travel gate, you know, and that are pretty close. So like that it does seem like there's an element of like when K-State has Kansas's attention, but you already beat them this year, so I fear that you very much have their attention. So
yeah,
anyway, that's my analysis. Take care.
To belabor the Tyler Perry point, just for anyone that wants to take a for those still taking a shot at him, and I don't know why you would be, just because of what happened in a possession or two. I've mentioned Kansas State shooting really, really well from the 3-point line. They were 9 of 21, almost 43% from that spot on the floor. Third game in a row where you shot over 40% from three. Well, Tyler Perry was 6 of 8. So that means everybody else was 3 of 13.
Yeah, I was just running the quick numbers over the last three games. K-State from three is 31 of let's see, 67. That's what, around 46.
Really good, but yeah. How many of those 31 has been Tyler Perry?
Well, a large chunk of them, because most of his shots are from three. But, you know, he had six. You mentioned it. I'm just pulling up his game log. He had last two games, Tyler Perry is 12 of 19 from three. And if you factor in the BYU game, last three games, he's 16 of 26 from three, which is insane.
Yeah.
So, DY, to answer your question, over 50% of K-State's made threes in the last three games have come from Tyler Perry. 16 of the 31 have come from him. 16 divided by 26 is I can't even do my calculator right. Is 62% from three. So Tyler Perry last three games has been nails. And to echo John's point, I think we all feel that way, just gutted for him. Now, look, the K-State staff, if they heard this, and the players, they'd be like, the season's not over. Why are these guys like acting like they're throwing a funeral on the season? You know, they've got two games this week, including Senior Day in Manhattan. They've got the Big 12 tournament. They've still got a chance. Maybe they'll pull out some surprises on us. Look, I still think they can very easily knock Iowa State. I shouldn't say very easily. I think they have a shot to knock off Iowa State in Manhattan on Saturday, and I will be there, and I will be bringing energy. So I'm looking forward to it, regardless of what happens on Tuesday night in Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, no, it feels – what is required of them feels like an uphill climb. That would be why we are talking in a tone that we are. Now, they shouldn't be thinking that way. Like, obviously, I want them to have belief. You're not going to get – you don't have a chance if you don't believe. So I hope they believe. I'm sure they do. It's just what's being asked of them is truly challenging. Even if this isn't a typical KU team, I mean, with Kevin McCullough, they pretty much are. And as long as he's there on senior night, dressed, I can see Kansas State making this a lot more competitive than the last few trips have been to Lawrence, but I struggle to see them coming out with a W.
Yeah, and even without McCuller, I mean, they destroyed Texas at home, they beat Baylor without him at home, so they're tough at home regardless. We all know that. And they'll want revenge. They've lost two in a row. I mean, there's a lot of things why working against Kansas State. They've lost two in a row.
I don't know when the last time they lost three in a row would be. It wasn't this year and probably wasn't last year. So that's probably it. It's been some time since they lost three in a row in general. And obviously from the last show that we did, we discovered actually our producer said they did lose three in a row last year. That's news to me. I didn't even think that's
so it can happen.
It can. You know what can happen? They're losing back-to-back games at Allen Fieldhouse. It just doesn't happen that much. In fact, the last time that happened, as we discovered in our last show, thanks to our producer, was 1989. But it was three losses in a row at Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be really, really challenging to say the least. I don't even know if I can watch it anymore. I'll be there Saturday, but I don't know if I can watch tomorrow night's. So it's just you feel like when you watch games in Lawrence, you kind of know what's going to happen. Even if a team is up by five or six in the second half, you just assume that KU will come back. I mean, I remember that game against West Virginia years ago. Huggins was the coach. And I think West Virginia was up by like 15 with 3 minutes left in Lawrence, and they lost. It was a nut. It was chaos. Anyways, I'm sure Nick remembers that game fondly. Well, it sucked. It sucked, DY, because I think right now, as of today, if they'd beaten Cincinnati, I think we would probably see them as one of the last teams in the field projected as of today. And regardless of what happened in Lawrence, you would have a chance to get right back in the field against Iowa State. So that one hurt. And look, I still have a lot of, I don't think it needs to be said, we still have a lot of trust in the coaching staff, Jerome Tang and them, and, you know, they'll get it fixed going forward with what happens. But hopefully they can pull out some upsets here and give us some exciting basketball down the stretch. So, all right. I don't have anything else. Do you? John, do you have anything else? Oh, wait, John left us. So, all right. Well, appreciate you guys. If you haven't had a chance, go check out the Matt Wells interview we did last week on that released on Friday. K-State co-offensive coordinator, associate head coach. It was a really fun interview to have with Coach Wells. So appreciate him jumping on with us. Check out the KCSN feed for 3MA to give that a listen. And we'll be bringing you guys a lot more football content here in the near future with spring ball starting this week. So go also check out KSO. Go to DY's site on On3, K-State Online. And go check out all the great work they have over there, Drew Mason, et cetera, as they cover K-State recruiting in depth. And we'll have all the information you need for spring ball and K-State hoops as DY and Mason, the crew, just got back from Cincinnati. So appreciate you jumping on with us, DY, just after a 10-hour drive home yesterday. So, all right. Take care, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.